Performing Arts, UNCC.edu.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Michael Tomczyk, in for Mike Collins. Healthcare is big business growing bigger in the United States, and Charlotte is building a reputation as a hub. Doctors, nurses, physician assistants, consultants, pharmacists, researchers, educators, it's a massive industry with a wide range of jobs. So we're going to have a little checkup on healthcare this morning, how it's grown, and what it means for the Charlotte economy going forward. Bob Morgan is CEO of the Charlotte Chamber. Bob, thanks for being here.
Good morning.
Carol Lovin is Chief Strategy Officer for Carolina's healthcare system, one of the area's largest employers and one of the country's biggest hospital systems. Carol, thanks to you too.
Thank you, Michael. Good morning.
And Tama Morris is Dean of Queen's University's Blair College of Health and Director of the Presbyterian School of Nursing. Tama, thank you for your time as well.
Thank you for having me.
Bob, how important is healthcare for the Charlotte economy?
Michael, the numbers are rather staggering. 100,000 jobs in the healthcare industry, that's one in 10 of us who are employed in the Charlotte region. The payroll is $11 billion. The total estimated economic impact is $25 billion. By far, this is our largest industry by employment. Banking employs about 55,000 people in the region. Again, we're talking about more than 100,000 jobs, and it's one of the fastest growing industries.
Do you have an idea of how long it has been the biggest industry? Because we have this sort of past reputation as really being a banking town.
You know, I don't know when healthcare would have overtaken banking, but we do know that it has the growth has been led by the two major hospital systems, two of the best in the country, both in terms of their size, but also just as importantly, their quality and their cost competitiveness. But it's more than just the hospitals. It's companies like Premier that 10 years ago moved its corporate headquarters from San Diego to Charlotte. Premier employs over 1,000 people in Ballantyne. They buy things in bulk for more than 3,000 member hospitals around the country, about $15 billion in buying power. There's a robust healthcare industry in addition to the major hospital systems that are drivers of the sector.
And how commonly, when you are talking to business folks around town, how common is it for people to realize the size of the sector here and that it does that it essentially is the biggest industry?
You know, I think we're still educating ourselves to that. I'm not sure that we wake up in the morning and realize and appreciate just how big of an industry and how big of a driver healthcare is to this economy. So we're trying to do things working with the folks in the industry to increase that awareness have had some success at that, but I think there's still some perception that needs to be changed, and there's an opportunity to do that.
And Carol, what are some examples of the range of jobs that fit into this industry?
Almost anything, Michael. When you look at when I think about people going into new careers and asking for career advice, it is limitless in terms of the numbers of things that they can do. So on the provider side, of course, Carolina's healthcare system, for example, has about 3,000 providers. It's large. We have a lot of physicians. We have a lot of other providers providing care. Novant has a lot of providers providing care. But there are so many people behind the scenes who support that work. And then beyond the footprint of the health system itself, as Bob alluded to, there are so many more. So the opportunities are limitless. And one of the things that I think is really growing is a better use of all the people who are doing the healthcare work. So what we are trying to do as a health system, as every health system is trying to do, is be very careful with those precious resources and say, you know, physicians don't have to do everything anymore. They can be surrounded by a team, make it a lot more efficient, make it better for the patient, and that's really what it's all about.
More use of physician assistants, nurse practitioners, Absolutely. Those examples?
Yes. And for example, one of the things that we think is critical and we've thought has been critical for the last little while is to take it a step further and say, let's pull out the advanced clinical practitioners. We call that group the nurse practitioners, the physician's assistants, et cetera. And what we've done at Carolina is, as other organizations have done too, is say, okay, you know, we are training a lot of you, but when you get out and start working, it's a big difference sometimes between the training that you get in school and then actually practicing. So we've started a fellowship to put advanced clinical practitioners, nurse practitioners, PAs, into the heart of the clinical settings and have them get really good experience. It's a fellowship. We have a center that we've created called the Center for Advanced Practice. We're excited about that and really are the largest one in the country doing that.
And Tamma, what are some of the examples of fields that you guys at Queens are training people for in healthcare?
Well, our biggest group of students that we have are the nurses, and we have both undergraduate baccalaureate nurses and also the master's prepared nurses. And then we have other majors in the healthcare field, too. In our kinesiology department, we have exercise and sports science, and that really has to do with improving performance for people in sports. But the piece that you don't think about is it also means preventing injuries. Because often people overtrain, they overreach, and so with our exercise and sports science, we can help to manage that. We also have a new major, a Bachelor of Science in Health Promotion. And this is a really important major for the future in the United States, because if you look at the Affordable Care Act, we really have to have a large, healthy population. So the entire healthcare system is really starting to shift from a treatment model to a health prevention and health promotion model. So we now have a major where students can learn how to help other people become and stay healthy. We have a human service studies major. And a lot of times we have students that come in and they come into healthcare. They want to be in healthcare. They know this is a growing future for employment and they want to help somebody, but they really don't know where they fit. And they don't want to do the physical things that a nurse does. They may not want to, maybe not have the background and the cognitive ability to do all the medication calculation and that. But they might be a good person to help them navigate through the healthcare system. The healthcare system is very, very complicated, and when you bring a client into the system, they don't know where to turn. So somebody in human service studies can help that person build on their strengths and can help them navigate through that healthcare system.
And are some of those programs growing from a demand standpoint, from an enrollment standpoint for you guys?
Both. What we do a lot is we work with both healthcare systems and with the community partners in the Charlotte region, and we say, what do you need? And when we have that type of feedback and that type of partnership, we are able to meet their future needs for employees. We are their pipeline. And on the other side of it, they may say to us, everybody knows basically what a nurse does, but we need our nurses to know more about Lean Six Sigma. And that's one of the things that we actually did. We meet quarterly with Carolina's Medical Center with our clinical nurse leaders, which is a master's in nursing. And when we met with them, the system said to us, these people have a good skill set, but what we really want to do is we want to shift them more to the Lean Six Sigma principles. So what we did was we actually changed and beefed up our curriculum in that area. So we are providing the type of student and the skill set they need for their employees.
And what exactly is the Lean Six Sigma?
The Lean Six Sigma is process improvement. It's being able to do things most effectively. And in the basis of it is you're improving quality. So everything you do in that as you process through Lean Six Sigma is for patient outcomes and improving the outcomes for the patient. What that does also is it also helps the healthcare system, because the practitioner today cannot just think of the patient, they also have to think of the system. So if we can more efficiently and effectively help a patient through a system, maybe coming in to get lab work, where do they check in, where do they get the lab work drawn, how do they get the results, that improves the outcome for the patient, decreases their time, increases the accuracy of their lab work, and at the same time, it will decrease costs for the system and streamline it.
Carol?
And Tamma, thank you for that, because we really appreciate it. It is making a huge difference in how we are getting the cost of care down for all health systems. So, for example, to get a real tangible picture in your mind, we have created literally cardboard models of some of the treatment centers that we put together, and where we have measured nurses' steps, because nurses are walking too much. And if we measure the nurses' steps and you multiply that by all the numbers of nurses, for example, that are working in a given shift, and you say, wow, we can be more efficient by that, you can cut down on the staffing. It's pretty amazing.
Michael, I'd like to jump in on the subject of jobs, because, again, let's go back to the number 100,000 jobs employed in the sector. not all of those are doctors and nurses and specialists in healthcare. I tell anybody, a college student who's looking to enter the job market, somebody relocating from elsewhere in the country midway through their career, take a look at the healthcare industry. There are jobs there. They are employing lawyers and accountants and property managers and you name it, whatever skill set you have. This is a big industry. It's a mature industry, and there's a lot of opportunity there.
And how is the pay within that industry? Is that a recruiting tool as well, or an advantage as you're talking to people about, hey, this is an industry you should consider?
A lot of great paying jobs, and not all of them are at the hospitals. And I'm mindful of a company that moved to Charlotte several years ago, Lynette. Lynette is a Czech Republic-owned manufacturer of hospital beds. So now you're talking about good manufacturing jobs. They actually started here as a North American sales office, but highly skilled technical-type equipment. Those type skills are needed for them to be successful, and they have come to Charlotte, grown their business significantly, and there's opportunity for more growth.
And I guess when you're thinking of a system the size of Carolina's healthcare system, Bob, to your point, there are all of these, you know, sort of secondary vendors and businesses that you have in order to support that. I mean, do you guys have, how broad of a range do you guys have as far as, you know, Czech bed makers or other examples that are part of the support that also equal more jobs?
You know, the future of healthcare, Michael, is all about partnerships in every respect. It is about partnerships with the suppliers and the pharma companies and other providers. There are a lot of things that we do together with all the systems in the greater Charlotte region and beyond. So it's really critical. There's also the side of healthcare that provides care or helps care better for the employees of these businesses too. So for example, Carolina's healthcare system has a relationship with about 3,000 employers in the greater Charlotte region. But it is all about collaborative partnerships, and that in turn can create even more jobs, Bob.
And how did we get this way? I mean, how did healthcare become such a massive part of the economy here?
Well, healthcare is a large part of most any economy. It's pretty common in major markets for healthcare to be the leading employer, led by the employment base at hospitals. And in Charlotte's case, we're the home to two of the largest not-for-profit healthcare systems. And so not only are the hospitals that are here putting people to work, but the people who are leading those systems throughout the Carolinas and throughout their footprint, many of them happen to be based in Charlotte. And so it's a reflection of the U.S. economy where healthcare plays such a large role, but it's also a reflection of two organizations that have grown with Charlotte. I'd like to suggest that much like in our banking industry where competition has helped to make each of our certainly two major banks, but also the other players better and more competitive and helped to drive Charlotte into becoming the second largest banking center in the country. There's vigorous competition right here in this market that has an impact in terms of employment, in terms of quality and cost competitiveness. And so all of that goes into the mix.
Tamla, and we've got about 30 seconds.
And the other part of that is when you are a student seeking healthcare education, you want to come to a center with the advanced healthcare that we have here in Charlotte. Queens is like a hub. We're between both systems. We work with both systems. And the students have really good experiences, rich experiences because of healthcare.
Okay. We're going to take a short break and then continue this conversation. You're listening to Charlotte Talks.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Community Blood Center of the Carolinas, local nonprofit blood center serving 27 local hospitals. Donors can give the gift of life by donating blood or platelets. Appointments at cbcc.us. And High Point University, a liberal arts-based institution providing students a college experience grounded in holistic education, experiential learning, and values-based living. Details at highpoint.edu. The grocery war is on. Harris Teeter is no longer the only player in town. And as more chains vie to bag your groceries, what's behind the supermarket boom? And what does this mean for you? Find out when Charlotte talks tomorrow at 9 on 90.7 WFAE. And if you missed our special voter roundtable on Monday, you can listen to it on our website, wfae.org/charlottetalks. And if you're interested in participating in a future voter roundtable, let us know. charlottetalks@wfae.org.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, President Obama announces a ban on solitary confinement for juveniles in federal prison. And the Supreme Court rules that prisoners given mandatory life sentences for murder when they were teenagers can argue for their release. New rules for juveniles in the criminal justice system.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
This is Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE. I'm Michael Tomczyk in for Mike Collins. We're talking about how healthcare has become big business in the Charlotte area. Tama Morris is Dean of Queen's University's Blair College of Health. Carol Lovin is Chief Strategy Officer for Carolina's Healthcare System. And Bob Morgan is CEO of the Charlotte Chamber. You can also join the conversation. Search for WFAE on Facebook and Twitter. A question for you: do you work in healthcare in this area? Where do you see the industry headed? Bob, to pick up where we were about this area becoming more known for healthcare, when you were out recruiting businesses, how common is it for them to be aware of the strength of the sector here?
Well, it's a major cost consideration. Any company that moves to Charlotte, typically a cost of living, cost of doing business that's 95% of the national average is right at the top of the list, along with workforce. Can they find the talent they need in this market? And then the connectivity of our transportation infrastructure. But it starts with cost. And that 95% of the national average, healthcare is a significant expense to employers. And back to what I was saying a few minutes ago, the competition that we have in this market produces very high quality healthcare and very cost competitive healthcare. It helps to give Charlotte a competitive advantage as we recruit against other major markets in the Southeast and throughout the country.
So Carolina's healthcare system is now the Charlotte area's largest employer with roughly 35,000 employees, according to the Chamber's latest data. That's about 12,000 more employees than the second biggest employer, Wells Fargo. Carol, what is it about this area that has helped you guys to grow the size that you have?
It's the growth of the area, and it's the absolute support of the community, because the future of healthcare, Michael, is not about health systems or other health companies. It is about consumers of healthcare. And every day, Carolina's healthcare system, as do with the other healthcare systems, think about how to make it better for the customer. And when I talk about the customer right now, I'm talking about the patient. Because what we've spent a lot of time thinking about at Carolina's is consumer demand. What are they asking for? What do they want? We have something that we call on-demand healthcare. And think about it, Michael, or any of us. If you want something right now, only you in your mind can determine that. So we have worked very hard to be innovative in that consumer-oriented part of healthcare, with a lot of urgent care spread across the area, a lot of freestanding EDs, a lot of options for virtual care, for example, where you can get on your smartphone and have a visit at 12 o'clock at night. And that is changing the face of healthcare, but it's all because of the consumer and what they're asking for.
Tama?
And we also have a much more educated consumer. And the education, the part of it comes from the internet. So on top of having more information, one of the challenges for consumers is being able to filter out what is correct, what is right for them. And that's one thing that people need to go to their health care provider for in the community and find out all this information, what part of it is right, what part of it may not be right, just because it's on the internet, it's not correct. But who do you trust? You have to have a trusted healthcare provider that you can consistently go to so that you develop that relationship.
These different examples of how technology is allowing patients to be more aware of their choices and in some cases get choices quicker, are these things from a patient standpoint, seems like a good thing. From an industry standpoint, from an employment standpoint, is it a good thing?
It's a very good thing. It is so good because what it does is it opens up again the ability for us to be more cost efficient with our resources, to think about right sizing our teams, making sure that people are doing the things they were trained to do and then being supplemented. For example, Tama, you were talking about the health promotions major, which is fantastic. That's a huge need that we see to have people committed, dedicated, educated, and trained to be able to do that, to free up some of that for the other pieces of healthcare.
But when I hear right sizing, part of me wonders if that fits into, so both of the big systems here, some of the systems nationwide, have had some cutbacks in the most recent years. So does that mean that, you know, as we get this better technology, we've kind of topped out employment-wise?
No, not at all. Because there are more people moving into the area. Bob, you've spoken about the growth, and you can address that again. But the other thing is we've got an aging population. We all know that. The demand for healthcare is not going away. I think it's the responsibility of everyone, the providers, the community, and the consumer themselves, to get more engaged in knowing when to seek the right care at the right time. For example, not everyone who thinks they have a real emergency probably needs to be in the emergency department, but could be handled by a virtual care visit or urgent care.
So basically the growth is looking forward. Some of the right sizing are just, I guess, temporary things now, in your view?
Absolutely. I think that first of all, the demand for healthcare is not going away. All of the projections that we look at, and we do this all the time, because we have an analytics group that we have dedicated to spending a lot of time and energy on. We believe that we need to be smart about the future. We need to be careful, again, with our resources. So one of the things, and the way that we believe that Charlotte can be a hub for healthcare, is by really focusing on data and analytics. And that will tell us more about the consumer experience, about the industry overall, and about how we provide the best care, all of us, to the community residents.
And as a late member of the baby boom population, it pains me to say, the baby boom population is driving the demand as our population ages, and the sky's the limit for the next couple of decades in terms of the health care that people are going to need as we all live longer and live healthier, and healthcare is a part of that answer. It's not just about the numbers. It's about quality, too, and talent. And if you look at the two hospitals in particular, some of the top oncologists and cardiologists and orthopedic surgeons and neurologists are right here in Charlotte. There's been an intentional effort by the human resources departments at both of our hospitals to go to Boston, to go to Houston, to go elsewhere outside of the U.S. to bring some of the very best talent here. That talent brings with it patients who will come to Charlotte, and call it the tourism of the healthcare industry, if you will, that it's not just those of us who live here who can avail ourselves of this great talent, but people will come to Charlotte seeking the talent that's here.
You know, you hear a lot about the idea of medical tourism, say in Europe. Is that the kind of thing that actually happens here? There are people who would come from elsewhere to get care in this region?
Absolutely. I can speak to that, Michael. We have super specialists, really, at Carolina's healthcare system that are attracting patients from a much broader geographic region. In fact, it's something that we believe is our responsibility, is to let people know what we do. Because in something like, for example, cancer care, we want to take that into the hearts of the communities. But we also know that there are certain diagnoses in cancer that are just so tough that they need to come into a center. So I know the health systems in this community are committed to doing that. And we are, as Bob said, attracting more and more folks, because the care can stop here. We have excellent specialists and super specialists.
Tama?
And that moves into the education realm, because when we are educating people to care for these clients, we teach them from a global perspective. We cannot simply teach them how to take care of that Charlotte resident. So we know that we have people coming to Charlotte for health care. We have to understand where they're coming from, what their culture is, and what their expectations are of health care. Because even though they're coming in for the best level of care, they may have totally different expectations based on their background, their history, their experience. So how do we bridge that gap, and how do we help them achieve the outcomes that they want while still honoring their background, their culture?
And what's your view of the pipeline of folks here? So we have, you know, the recruiting of other prominent doctors or folks from elsewhere. The people coming up through, some of the people coming through Queens, how strong is that pipeline?
It's a very strong pipeline, because they, again, this is a strong sector for employment, and that's what a lot of the people, the young students coming into education are looking for a job today. So this is strong that they want to go into healthcare. But it's also, we tend to draw from a broad area, And one of the things we always have to look at is students who come in from a rural area, so they're coming into an urban healthcare environment. Originally, we thought they were going to go back to their urban areas and practice. And what we find is they get to the city and the urban area and the resources and everything else Charlotte has, and they want to stay. That's great for us. We love it. We keep them. But we also have to have an eye on what happens for those students who go back to the rural area. Do they understand the differences in urban and rural health care? And if they stay here, are we draining the rural areas of health care providers? That becomes a different issue. And when we look at a system like Carolina's health care, they have institutions in many rural and urban areas, and you have to constantly look at where is your pipeline, why is it shifting, where is it shifting. If we provide education to keep somebody in a rural area, what does that need to look like?
Well, how do you balance, though? Obviously, students will get to go where they'd like. How do you balance adding more talent for this area with, like you said, making sure that the rural areas, which especially since the Affordable Care Act and in states that have not expanded Medicaid, can really struggle to get the talent they need to provide care?
And that's part of what we teach, is how does healthcare differ in the different areas? And we have a focus on community health in our program so that you understand that as you go out to the community just doesn't mean outside of a hospital in a city. It also means into these urban areas and rural areas and suburban areas. And we demonstrate that need, and our students have experiences out there. And truthfully, a lot of students, when they get into the community setting, which was not what they expected. They expected to come into healthcare and work in a hospital. But when you're in a clinic and you get to see that patient every couple weeks and you get to see their progress, it's a whole different experience than an episodic visit with a patient in a hospital while they're having a traumatic event.
Okay. Carol?
And, you know, the providers are doing a lot to do exactly what you said, Tama, in terms of, I think it's our responsibility to help reinvent care in all these settings. And how do we create rural health care to be impactful and to really make a difference in the community? So we have young people that go back there. And one example that we just opened up probably about 2 years ago now is our facility in Anson County. And Anson is a very rural community with a lot of healthcare needs. And we set out about 5 years ago to say, how can we change rural healthcare? And ended up with a model that we opened, like I said, a couple years ago, where we literally went from the hospital, moved out of the hospital, and built a new facility that is largely outpatient, has about 12 beds, I think. But you walk in the front door, and the first question you're asked, it's a triage desk saying, do you need to see a doctor or is there a true emergency? And even then, what we're doing is saying, okay, not everybody needs the most acute care. And so we've taken that and then wrapped all the community resources around that. We're making a huge difference in the number of emergency room visits unnecessarily utilized, et cetera. So I think the responsibility is on the healthcare providers as well to invent and reinvent healthcare.
And Carol, as you guys are doing hiring that's lower down, you know, say people out of school, out of med school, how often can you find the resources, the talent that you need from the schools in this area or in the state?
We're so blessed in this area, in this region, in this state, because there are incredible educational institutions, not only in Charlotte, but beyond in the state as well, with the five medical schools that we have, et cetera. So when we look at our healthcare resources, we look at the Charlotte region. You know, both of the health systems here have nursing schools. We work with Queens, of course, through that end, and others, UNC Charlotte. We're so blessed. So we are surrounded by good, solid healthcare education, and we take advantage of it.
As large as the industry is here, we don't have a standalone med school. Is that something that is important, or do we have the resources from the other schools so that it's not that big a deal?
I'm going to jump in there.
Please, Carol, go ahead.
We do have a medical school in Charlotte.
The affiliate from UNC, but we don't have a standalone med school.
Well, if you call a standalone a building, then that might be different. But what I want to say is that what we have in Charlotte is, in 2010, we partnered with the University of North Carolina to form the UNC School of Medicine Charlotte campus. And right now, at any given time, we have about 50 or 60 third and fourth year students who are training here with the intent and the evaluation to expand that over time. We have 300 or so residents then that get their training after medical school. But the medical school training in Charlotte is very critical. And we have a building on campus that says UNC School of Medicine, Charlotte campus, and absolutely believe that medical school is immersed in this community.
So basically the affiliation with UNC and Carolina's healthcare system fills enough that you don't think we would need a separate Charlotte, you know, med school that's independent.
We've had an affiliation for a long time. In 2010, it was decided that we would take that affiliation to the next level and actively start doing more education here in Charlotte, which is what we've done.
And Tama, from your perspective, do we have, when you were talking to students, are there enough options for them to find the education they want in this area if they want to go into healthcare?
There are, and I think the key is really to find the right place for that student. Like I said, they often come into healthcare education and not really know where they want to be. So what's really important is to get them into the right track, into the right major. And we have a large interest in our program, so we are constantly fielding calls, and that's one of the things that helps us drive what we're going to offer. So if we have a lot of calls for a certain area, it's an area we're going to look at. Why are we getting those calls? What's the interest? What is the market for employment after graduation? And that could be a reason that we would add a major.
Go ahead, Paul.
Michael, I was just going to add that there is an opportunity. It applies to healthcare. It applies to other sectors as well. Charlotte has PhD-level research, particularly taking place at UNC Charlotte. They got into that business 10 or 12 years ago. The growth has been impressive. We are still much smaller in terms of the volume of PhD-level research in any subject than most of the markets around the Southeast with which we compete, certainly much smaller than a place like Boston, which just landed the corporate headquarters of General Electric, in large part because of the research and the innovation and technology that goes along with it. A long-term opportunity and challenge for us is to grow that research, whether it's done at the med school partnership between Carolina's Healthcare and UNC Chapel Hill. There's a role likely for UNC Charlotte in this, in specific disciplines, and we need to keep our eye on that as a long-term opportunity.
We're getting several questions that are related to cost. The one I'd like to start with is the cost of getting into this industry. From a doctor's standpoint, obviously there is quite a bit of expense and years that goes into that training. Are there other fields that are less expensive from like a student standpoint to get into?
The cost is really related to the school. Sometimes it's field related. Medicine is, of course, you're going to go to school for a longer period of time, so you have to think about what your investment is. But you always think about your investment and then your return on investment. If you are looking at certain fields, there are extra costs, and a very simple thing, nursing. The books that you buy in nursing are more expensive than books you might buy in a different major. So it becomes, you need to look at the school, you need to look at the major, and you need to look at the related materials.
We'll take a short break and then continue this conversation. You're listening to Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Nona's Sweets Bakery Cafe, serving sandwiches, paninis, soups, salads, and more. Lunch menu options online at nonassweets.com. Coming up next at 10 o'clock on The Diane Rehm Show, President Obama announces a ban on solitary confinement for juveniles in federal prison, and the Supreme Court rules that prisoners given mandatory life sentences for murder as teenagers can argue for their release. New rules for juveniles in the criminal justice system at 10 o'clock on The Diane Rehm Show, here on 90.7 WFAE. If you'd like to join our conversation, now's a good time. Email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook and Twitter. We're coming right back.
Oil's cheap, gas is cheap, but hey, you've got a hot new electric car.
The Bolt really is an investment in the future. And so we look at this car to be the breakthrough to take EVs mainstream.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, the woman whose job it is to make that happen. Next time on Marketplace from APN.
Marketplace this evening at 6:30 on 90.7 WFAE. Listener-funded public radio.
This is Charlotte Talks on WFAE. I'm Michael Tomczyk. We're discussing Charlotte's massive healthcare industry this morning with Carol Lovin of Carolina's Healthcare System, Bob Morgan of the Charlotte Chamber, and Tama Morris of Queens University. We'd also love to hear from you. Email charlottetalks at wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook and Twitter. I'd like to start this part with the idea of healthcare being recession-proof, or at least as recession-proof as an industry can be. Bob, how did it manage through this most recent recession?
Well, I think, and I'm not sure it's all related to the recession, I think some of the question marks coming out of policy from Washington has probably had a dampening effect on employment growth in the sector. Whether you'd call that recession-proof or not, I'm not sure. But I think certainly employers not in the healthcare sector still have more questions than answers about where we're going as a country with our healthcare policy. The impact to the major hospital systems has been, continues to be, and will be profound for a long, long time. So, yes, the demand of the aging baby boom population is a driver and a reality, but I think we've seen a little more defense being played than offense. Probably a combination of the policy question with the recession of 2008.
I want to get into the specific effects of Obamacare in a minute, but first, is there, compared to other industries, does healthcare tend to keep jobs and manage better when we have, for example, a financial crisis?
It's one of the top growing industries that we have, and we see it with some of the organizations we've already talked about. We haven't mentioned the fact that we now have a major facility the Veterans Administration has is building and to put in Charlotte with 500-plus jobs associated with that. It is a growth industry going forward.
Tama?
I think the other thing that's really good about healthcare is there are a lot of part-time jobs. So we have a lot of people who are able to work for an extended period of time because they can work part-time. But what we're also having now is we had people during the recession who did not retire. This was the safety net, and they stayed employed. But now, as the recession seems to level off, we have more people that are looking at retirement, and that's opening up a lot more positions for people to come into.
Carol?
Speaking about recession, there will always be people who need a lot of health care. So if that is the definition of a recession-proof, then people will always need care. We've talked about how growing a demand that will be. But I think the challenge with all that is that it's more than just the demand of care. It is about the payment of care. It is about the changing face of how we deliver care. So perhaps it's delivered in a different way, and that has financial implications as well for the providers who are providing care, as well as for the consumers who are consuming care.
And what are some of the ways that the Affordable Care Act in particular is affecting the strength of the healthcare industry in our area?
So that's an interesting question, Michael, because what we would say is that the Affordable Care Act absolutely was a legislative act. Far before that, I think the majority of health systems in the country, certainly Carolina's healthcare system, were thinking about what we needed to do to change the face of healthcare. So with the Affordable Care Act, again, legislation, we were well on our way before that to say we want to get the cost down and be efficient with our resources, and we want to get the quality up. So that was an event in time, but I think the most important part of the Affordable Care Act for a system like Carolina's was the implications that it could have on the financial side for reimbursement. We were already working on getting quality up, costs down, but when you superimpose then some of the financial implications, it was about payment of health care. That's what it was about.
On the cost front, we've heard more recently of the past couple of years about a slowing growth of the curve, but still, to the average person, premiums are going up, deductibles are going up, so you're having to pay more. There's Dennis who asked online, what are the systems doing to prevent healthcare costs from making such a big financial impact on patients?
What we are trying to do, and I think one of the best things that we can do is get the right care delivered to every single patient or consumer who wants it at the right time and in the right setting. In the right setting is probably the most critical aspect, because you've got sort of this interesting dichotomy of consumerism going on, where the consumer is saying, I want it right now and I want to go to the emergency department, and so that consumer will go. But on the other hand, you've got the health system and all of us working together to say, you know, maybe, again, the emergency department is an expensive place. You could go to another place for it. So I think the real key, I know what we're focusing on a lot, is on that first entry level into the health system to get it to the right place in the least costly way for the consumer and the system.
And Tama, this gets at something you mentioned earlier, which is this shift in healthcare towards trying to manage and prevent more so, because I guess the idea is that ends up actually with healthier folks and less expensive care, because you're not just going to the emergency department.
Absolutely. You want to have that healthy populace, and that does mean that you need to go for a well checkup periodically, but what it also means is you're not going because you don't know how to manage a cold and you're preventing cardiac disease and things like that. We want people to know how to prevent a heart attack rather than how to treat a heart attack.
And this issue is bigger than just the industry. We've talked a lot in recent years about healthy Charlotte as a population. We're not the healthiest community out there. We have a lot of opportunity to individually take ownership and responsibility for our own personal health. It relates to subjects such as, are we building parks and sidewalks and opportunities for people to get outdoors and to move and to be more healthy? And there are direct connections between those kinds of investments. You can get a little further out and talk about the subject of economic empowerment, an issue we're talking a lot about in Mecklenburg County, some of the leadership coming from the healthcare industry. And I think an important point to note here is that as our hospital systems have grown and as the industry has grown, the civic leadership coming from the industry is so much larger today than it was just 10 or 20 years ago. There's virtually nothing happening in this community, whether it's the Chamber of Commerce or the YMCA or United Way or the subject of economic empowerment, that the healthcare industry is not helping to lead the way. Economic empowerment relates to health, and health relates to economic empowerment. So we're all in this together. It's not just those who are directly employed in the industry.
And as there is this bigger focus on managing health on the front end, does that create more opportunity in this area? Does that alternatively mean fewer people are needed to do fewer jobs?
It means it's a shift of where the healthcare worker is going to be. And the other thing we're shifting to is population-based healthcare. We used to treat a patient and be very focused on this patient, the second patient, the third patient, the fourth patient. Now we take a look at those four people together and we say, you all live in the same neighborhood. You all are having heart disease, but do you have a walkable area outside that neighborhood? How are you preventing the problems that the four of you have together? Can you get together and become healthy? So we really have that true focus, which means that we have to educate people to work with populations in addition to working with individuals who need episodic care.
That's one of the things that we just love about this community, because things like Healthy Charlotte, where we all come together and can make a real difference, are going to impact this in a way that we couldn't do alone. Because it does get back to that consumer of healthcare. And yes, we want to meet consumer needs, and we're working really hard to innovate every day to do that. We also know that as part of that, the person who owns healthcare at the end is the individual, him or herself. We all do. We're responsible for our own healthcare. And that is something that I think has been, it's revolutionary, and it's evolutionary too as we go forward, because we want, you know, we talk about Carolinas. You've asked me a lot about the size and this and that. So is bigger better? I would say better is better. And better is better on healthcare at every level, and it gets down to the patient as well.
And in looking at the way the industry is shifting, how big of a role is technology playing, and how well positioned are we as an area to take advantage of that?
Technology is playing a huge role. Technology is a huge enabler. And technology is our friend in this aspect. Think about virtual care. Think about a mother at 2 a.m. who has a crying baby and you want the advice of a healthcare professional. You can now do that over your computer or on your phone. And that's a less expensive way to go for the most part and a better answer right away. There are many, many areas of technology that are helping us, but it will be our enabler. We have a Carolina's a tracker. It's a new app where all the Fitbit and the Apple Watch and all that information is going directly to, can go directly to our providers now if you sign up for that. That is making care better. So we view technology as our friend and we're excited about it. It feeds right into all the analytics and the data that we're using to make personalized care.
Tama, how quickly can a place like Queens adapt to these new technological innovations and teach them?
We have to be able to adapt quickly because we are providing, teaching that student that when they enter the workforce, that they are up at the level of the of where the workforce is right now. For instance, we have a nursing simulation center in our nursing program, and they have the same equipment in the nursing simulation center, the monitors, the IV pumps, and everything else that that patient that they that student will see in the healthcare system. And the other piece of technology, we love technology, it's advancing healthcare, but we also can't lose the high touch. So we teach our students that they are a high-tech, high-touch provider of care.
I'm also curious about the level of diversity within the employment of this area. I cover a lot of healthcare stories, and just in my personal experience going out and reporting on these stories, it seems to be one of the broadest, most diverse industries as far as the employment sector. Is that just an observation that's just a small sample size, or does that back up? Do we have data on how diverse healthcare is as an industry?
I don't have that data with me, but my observation, and Carol might be able to add some numbers to this, the workforce is very diverse, and entry level, but also senior leadership.
That's something we love about healthcare. I, too, don't have the numbers with me off the top of my head, Bob, but we are better because of the diversity in every respect of age, of race, of religion, of thought. And we intentionally seek healthcare professionals and healthcare workers who can bring diversity to our workforce.
And is that a recruiting tool, so to speak, when you are trying to build jobs or get companies to come here?
The diversity and the growing diversity of Charlotte's population is absolutely a competitive advantage. Companies are looking to do business where there's a welcoming culture, where there is diversity. Again, it's one of Charlotte's competitive advantages. I also think we've seen, and Carol might agree or not with this, I think there's been a shift in the last decade or so of particularly the hospital systems moving away from thinking of themselves as a not-for-profit. You go back far enough, they were called charities. They are nonprofits for sure, but they try to run themselves like businesses, and that relates to talent. You see bankers who leave the banking industry to go help some of these organizations to better brand themselves and to be more businesslike in how they go about their business. I think that's part of the reason that the industry is as successful and as large as it is here.
Tama?
There's a significant body of research that demonstrates that a diverse healthcare provider population working with diverse patients results in higher quality healthcare. For instance, if you are talking to a doctor or a nurse who is like yourself, they've actually measured the length of the conversation, and there's more talking time, more getting to know what the actual problems are. So it's very, very important for us to build this diverse population of healthcare providers. In certain sectors, it's more diverse than others. For instance, if you're looking at exercise and sports science, that's very balanced between men and women for the students that are coming through. Nursing, we have more ethnic diversity. We're always doing that, but over the years, 20, 25 years, we have about 10% men. And so I wonder, for men in healthcare, men, how many male providers have you had care for you? And what would that difference be? We're very used to women being taken care of by a male doctor sometimes, but how many male nurses have cared for you, and how would that change the relationship? So one of the things that we're constantly looking to do is to change that balance.
We have a question from Rob about nursing program options in the evening hours. Perhaps that makes a difference. He's wondering if there could be more programs that offer evening hours.
And that one of the things we're constantly looking at is how do we meet the needs of our students. Evening hours depend on many things. Can we have a clinical site? One of the biggest, there are two big barriers and challenges to develop nursing programs are finding faculty that are qualified to teach students, and then second is having a clinical site. So there are possibilities that if you have a program that can bring those two things together, they could provide evening hour clinicals. But there are many alternative programs. One of the things that's been driven in healthcare lately is distance education. We offer one of our master's tracks entirely online because we have nurses who want to get their master's degree, but they work 12-hour shifts. They can't come in during the day or the evening because it overlaps with their shifts. So that's caused us to shift to offer our program by online education.
And how much collaboration is there currently between Queens or other universities and the Carolinas Healthcare Systems or Novant Healths of the area?
Extensive collaboration. We, in fact, with Carolinas Medical Center, we actually meet with them every quarter and talk about where we're going with healthcare, how our students are doing within their system. Are we providing benefits to the system? Our senior nursing students recently provided all their capstone projects were presented at Carolinas Medical Center so that their nursing staff could come through and earn continuing education credits. And that was sponsored by the Sigma Theta Tau Nursing Honor Society.
Carol?
You know, there are so many more access points now, too, for students to train at because mm-hmm. it is so much outpatient focused, not just about the hospital anymore. So with all the access points that we have on the on-demand care side as well as the inpatient side, lots of opportunities.
That's all the time that we have this morning. Carol Lovin is Chief Strategy Officer for Carolinas Healthcare System. Tama Morris is Dean of Queens University's Blair College of Health and Director of the Presbyterian School of Nursing. And Bob Morgan is CEO of the Charlotte Chamber. Y'all, thank you so much for the hour.
Thank you, Michael.
I'm Michael Thomas.
Go Panthers, that's right.
Big thanks to Aaron Kiever as well for producing this show.